I see within this prayer is within this prayer is that, you know, through having studied the Dharma, then coming to live in the ethics, abandoning the 10 non-virtuous actions of our body, speech and mind, so that in terms of this lifetime and also through future lifetimes, you know, one is able to secure higher rebirth through living in such ethics, and not only a secure higher rebirth, but be blessed with the opportunity to encounter pure spiritual guides, showing the unmistaken path, and once again for us to be able to listen to the Dharma, contemplate on it, meditate on it, and thereby enhance ourselves progressively from lifetime to lifetime. So, as it is stated within the Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, you know, the idea of, you know, in each successive lifetimes, then, progressing from happiness to happiness. So, all of this is done through the basis of living in the ethics, abandoning 10 non-virtues, up to, you know, cultivating bodhicitta, and on the basis of bodhicitta, then progressing along the grounds and paths consisting of the paths of, you know, accumulation, preparation, path of seeing, path of meditation, so that eventually, by fully completing all these grounds and paths, that one can attain the unified state of the Buddha's enlightenment or Vajradhara's enlightenment. In this lifetime, by studying the Lamrim, the graduated path to enlightenment, by training our mind in these practices, and if we are able to generate the realizations of our Lamrim practices, such as perfect human rebirth and so forth, then if we can actually generate the realizations of it in terms of this lifetime, that would be the very best. But even if one didn't get around to generating the actual realization, and if death should occur, then in the successive lifetime, then following lifetime, once again, then one can have the opportunity to re-engage back in such as these practices, be able to revive the imprints of having been exposed to these practices in the previous lifetime, and again, re-engage back in the graduated stages of the practice, beginning with perfect human rebirth. Once again, meditate on its great minute and on its great rarity, like that, through meeting with, you know, again, flawless, unmistaken spiritual guides. Then one can again revive oneself in this practice to make further progress in one's practices, practices that are common to the small scope, pattern practices that are common to the middling scope, and the pattern practices of the high scope.
So
So then one generates bodhicitta, then that is when one enters into the minor path, enters into the first of the five paths, which is the path of accumulation. And you know, as one progresses through the path of accumulations, small, middling, and great, then one trains in the practices of the six perfections, practicing the six, you know, through receiving the teachings on it, through understanding these practices, contemplating on it, then one engages in such as these practices of the six perfections. And then when one is able to generate the concentration of the union of the calm abiding and the special insight, that is when one is able to, you know, enter into the path of preparation, and through the path of preparations, the stages of heat, peak, forbearance, and highest mandindama, then when one is able to generate the level of a concentration in a way in which one is able to abandon the gross manifest forms of the objects of abandonment, then when one develops that capacity, then one is able to transfer to the next level of the path.
And then, 教堂里面他说，俺那啥，长春三宝地，俺那他说的三面有花花草了七八个，他的姐姐在那，俺那姐姐对吧？俺那真正，真正在那，俺那跟他他天气一月份哪呢？俺那跟他的帮你七头，教堂里那个是教堂街道的那个说，俺那啥弄不说，咱先不说，是吧？
So Bodhisattva on the path of preparation, you know, in order to attain Buddhahood, then what are the obstacles this Bodhisattva experience? The knowledge obstructions, you know, obscuration of knowledge, obscuration to omission, which are known as grasping at the truth. True existence. So these are of two kinds, the artificial or the imputed kind, and the other being the innate kind. So in order to first abandon the artificial kind, the imputed kind, so the practitioner on the path of preparation in the post-meditational period accumulates extensive merit to have the powerful condition to be able to abandon this kind of imputed or artificial, knowledge obstructions.
Then, I'm not sure if you're going to be able to do this. Then, I'm not sure if you're going to be able to do this.
So this practitioner on the path of preparation, when the individual attains the fourth level, which is the highest mundane dharma, and at that level, when the individual is engaged in the single-pointed equipoise and emptiness, this exalted mind engaged in that kind of single-pointed equipoise and emptiness is still a conceptual state of mind at the stage of the highest mundane dharma on the path of preparation. It is still the emptiness that it is realizing is just a generic realization. It's still a conceptual mind. This exalted mind of single point equipoise and emptiness just has a conceptual realization of emptiness or generic realization of emptiness. And so when this realization is transformed into being a direct realization of emptiness, so that it is able to abandon this kind of imputed, artificial grasping at true existence, then it transfers into the path of you know, the path of seeing.
所以，
this uninterrupted path, you know, which is the direct realization of the direct realization of emptiness, not only abandons artificial impurity, grasping at true existence, but it also abandons the object of abandonment of the soul to realizes, you know, the view of holding external existence, you know, the duality, of subject and object, you know, is what is abandoned, and besides that, it also abandons the hearers, you know, the obscuration of delusions is abandoned. All these are at the level of being, you know, artificial or imputed. The imputed obscuration of delusions, duality of, you know, of subject and object. So when this exalted mind of single point equipoise and emptiness, when it becomes a direct realization of emptiness, when it becomes a direct realization of emptiness, so that it now it becomes an uninterrupted path of the path of seeing, and thereby, you know, abandons all these artificial, you know, grasping a true existence, artificial duality of, you know, subject and object, and the artificial obscuration of delusions. When it totally abandons this, then what it achieves is the liberated path. When it separates away from the object of abandonment, then it attains the liberated path of the path of seeing. So here in this case, you know, all these objects of abandonment are abandoned in a way that they will never ever arise again. And so you see, you know, you have attained the cessation, because from this stage of abandonment, it is abandoned in a way in which it will never arise again. So you have cessation. The Bodhisattvas on the path of seeing, so their conventional bodhicitta in their mental continuum, from this stage onwards, is known as the bodhicitta of pure extraordinary supreme thought, as opposed to, you know, the bodhicitta which is generated on the path of accumulation, you know, on the path of accumulation. That bodhicitta is known as the aspirational bodhicitta, still known as the aspirational bodhicitta. But from the first bhumi onwards, from the path of seeing, which is equivalent to the first ground, first bhumi onwards, that bodhicitta becomes a bodhicitta of pure extraordinary supreme thought.
So
So you see, on the first ground, which is that on the path of seeing, this bodhicitta of pure, extraordinary, supreme thought, you know, transforms the individual's body into a nature of mental body. You see, the previous body was a body, you know, undermined by karma and delusions. But by generating this kind of bodhicitta of such purity, such pure, extraordinary supreme thought, then its previous body of karma and delusions is transformed into a mental body. You see, the bodhisattva was on the path of up to the path of preparations, you know, a highest mundane dharma. The body is still very much mandated by karma and delusions. But from the path of seeings, from the path of seeing onwards, that bodhicitta which is now conjoined with the supported by the direct realization of emptiness. So that bodhicitta is known as a bodhicitta of pure, extraordinary supreme thought, which transforms even the practitioner's body into a mental body, a body which is in the in nature of mind, even in the nature of mind. So you see, just like the special alloy that is able to transform all base metal into gold, so this bodhicitta of a pure, extraordinary supreme thought transforms this previously ordained body of calm and delusions into a mental body, and like so from the first bhumi onwards, from the first bhumi onwards, or from the path of seeing onwards, then bodhisattvas no longer have a body of karma and delusions. From the first bhumi onwards, then bodhisattvas do not have aggregates that are under the control of karma and delusions.
Okay.
So this was already mentioned yesterday, but again, just to follow up on it, after having attained the liberated path, then, on the first ground, from that stage of the liberated path, then again you engage in the post meditational period of extensive accumulation of merit. This merit is so that one is empowered, that one has the support or the power to be able to abandon the next phase of the objects of abandonment. So that would be so that one can abandon what is known as the objects of abandonment on the path of meditation. We talked about yesterday, the gross great of the great grasping at true existence. So this is what needs to be abandoned. So again, from the post meditational phase you know, of accumulating merit, then again you re-engage back into an equipoise, and when this equipoise is generated to become an uninterrupted path, meaning like, you know, when this exalted wisdom of single points, equipoise and emptiness, whenever it becomes empowered to be able to abandon this gross weight of the great grasping at true existence, the object of abandonment, are on the path of meditation, then, and that is when one attains the path of meditation on the first bhumi.
所以，前面当广发经济清理发现没人给广发经济清理清过了，查了一些些没了，被我们以前呢，大家把这帮给弄到了错把当，俺们啥看不见，啥意味都不好些，啊。So
you see the moment when this uninterrupted path, meaning this exalted wisdom of single points, equipoise, and emptiness, when this becomes effective to abandon the gross grade of the great, you know, grasping a true existence, the object of abandonment on the path of meditation, then one attains the liberated path. When one abandons it, one attains the liberated path. And when one attains that liberated path, then one transfers from the first ground to the second ground. First bhumi to the second bhumi. So, on the second bhumi, when you have attained the liberated path, then again you engage in the post-meditational phase of accumulating extensive merit in support of being able to abandon what is known as the subtle weight of the great grasping at the true existence, the object of abandonment on the path of meditation. So then from the phase of being engaged in the post-meditative period's accumulation merit, then again you go back into equipoise in dhammata, or the sphere of reality or emptiness. And so when that exalted mind of single poise, equipoise and emptiness is generated to a degree of being a powerful antidote, here known as the uninterrupted path, powerful enough to abandon the subtle weight of the great in grasping at the true existence, which is the abandonment on the path of meditation. And besides this, what it also abandons is the subtle great of the great, imputed obscuration of delusions. What it also abandons is the subtle great of the great, duality of subject and object. Whenever that mind of exalted mind of single point equipoise becomes powerful enough to become a total antidote, then it is the one has generated the uninterrupted path.
Okay.
So when this uninterrupted path abandons these three objects of abandonment, becomes a complete effective antidote to totally abandon these three objects of abandonment, then when it abandons it, then you attain liberative path, the cessation, the total cessation of it, the liberative path. And when this liberative path is attained, then one transfers from the second ground to the third ground.
So
again, on the third bhumi, when the third ground, when you experience the liberated path of the third ground, then from that liberated path again, you go through the phase of the post-meditational period, the accumulation of merit, to abandon the next set of the object of abandonment. Then from the post-meditational phase, you re-engage into the state of equipoise. What is being abandoned here? Seeking to abandon here is the medium grade. You have great medium. So that is what one is seeking to abandon of the grasping at true existence, or the medium grade obscuration of delusions, the medium grade duality of a subject and object. So like this, you engage in the equipoise, and when that equipoise is generated, it to become a powerful antidote, then it is an uninterrupted path. Exalted mind, single point, equipoise and emptiness, which is an uninterrupted path. It becomes an uninterrupted path when it is a complete antidote to abandon these three objects of abandonment. And when it abandons it, then you attain the liberative path. When you attain this liberative path of total abandonment, that liberative path, which is the cessation, you transfer from the third ground to the fourth ground. So like that, this is how you progress along the ten grounds. So in short, on these ten grounds, you have ten abandonments. These ten abandonments are abandonments, objects of abandonments of the path of meditation. So how they are divided is like these objects of abandonments are divided by you have a great of the great, great middle, great small, middle great, medium small, then small great, small medium, and small, like that. You have nine, but tenth one is how you make it ten is like the great great is the first one, the great of the great is divided into two, the gross great great and the subtle great great great. So that is how you have the 10 objects of abandonment on these 10 grounds. So you see, on the first ground, on the first bhumi or the first ground, you have the first uninterrupted path, the initial uninterrupted path, which acts as a direct antidote to the object of abandonment of the path of seeing, and the last uninterrupted path on the first bhumi, the last the final uninterrupted path on the first bhumi, then that acts as an antidote to the to the, you know, the to the gross great of the great, and that which is then the then you have the liberated path which transfers you to the second bhumi, and then you have the the last uninterrupted path which then on the second bhumi acts as a as a direct antidote to the subtle great of the great object of abandonment. And so like that, then you have on the third bhumi you have the that uninterrupted path. You transfer to the third bhumi first by going to the liberated path, and the last uninterrupted path then acts as an antidote to the you know, the great medium in object of abandonment. So like that, you have up to the tenth. That you know, on the tenth, you what is abandoned is the you know, the small the smallest of the small. So like that, as you successively go through, then on the seventh ground, then the uninterrupted path, what it abandons is the small is the medium small of the category of the mediums, then the small one that is what is abandoned on the seventh bhumi. And then when you abandon that, then you attain the liberated path which transfers you to the eighth bhumi. So all the grounds or bhumis below the eighth, below the eighth, you still experience grasping at true existence, grasping at the truth in the you know, when we are in post meditational phase. So from the eighth bhumi onwards, eighth ground onwards, then you totally destroy all manifest forms of grasping at the truth. And then from the eighth ground onwards, then you know, you do not experience any kind of gross effort to engage oneself on the path. You know, one totally pacifies any kind of gross effort on one's part to engage in the path. So, so from the first bhumi to the seventh bhumi, from the first to the seventh ground, the bodhicitta is known as the bodhicitta of pure, extraordinary, supreme thought.
That's
So the 8th, 9th and the 10th grounds are known as the pure grounds, pure bhumis. Why? Because you have completely destroyed all manifest forms of grasping at the truth. One has thoroughly pacified all gross effort on one's part to engage in the path of practices like that. And so even the bodhicitta from the 8th to the 10th onwards is a bodhicitta known as the bodhicitta of full ripening.
So
you see, when one attains the eight bhumis, liberated path, what one has abandoned is the object of abandonment, which is medium small. So then, from the liberated path, then you again accumulate merit to be able to abandon, So you accumulate merit after generating the liberated path on the eighth bhumi, then you again engage in post-meditation phase of accumulation merit, so that one has the support of the merit to abandon the small grade, eight. On the eighth, the small grade is abandoned. On the ninth, small medium is abandoned. And on the tenth, smallest of smallest abandoned. So like how it is explained before, you accumulate the merit, you re-engage in a state of equipoise, and when that equipoise is cultivated to become an uninterrupted path, powerful enough to abandon the small grade. And when it abandons it, then you attain the liberated path, which transfers you to the ninth bhumi. And again, on the ninth bhumi's liberated path, from that phase, you again go through accumulation of merit in the post-meditation period, again re-engage back in a state of equipoise, and when that equipoise is cultivated to become a powerful antidote in the form of an uninterrupted path, then that what it abandons is the small medium. And when it is when one is totally separated away from this object of abandonment, one attains the liberated path, which transfers you to the tenth ground. So and then on the So on the tenth ground, the final continuum of a sentient being, at the stage of a final continuum of a sentient being, the uninterrupted path, which is the final continuum of a sentient being, acts as an antidote on the smallest of the small grasping at the truth, on the smallest of the small obscuration of delusion, on the smallest of the small duality of subject and object, like that. Then you know, that that fine that uninterrupted path of the final continuum of a sentient being, then as an answer on these three objects of abandonment. So then that uninterrupted path of the final continuum, the second moment, that uninterrupted path of final continuum of the sentient being, then abandons, completely abandons everything that which is to be abandoned. In that phase, you have totally exhausted everything that which is to be abandoned. And the next second moment, in the second moment, then one attains the exalted wisdom of the omniscient mind, and one actualizes all of the four Buddha bodies at the same time: the emanation body, the perfect enjoyment body, the truth body, and the nature body of the Buddha. So in that sphere for of having attained enlightenment, then like before, you know, moved by their compassion for sentient beings suffering, then they emanate out various emanations in accordance with sentient beings, interest, mind level, and predispositions, and in this way, fulfill the works benefiting sentient beings, particularly in respect to sentient beings' guidance towards enlightenment with regards to what is to be abandoned, with what is to be practiced, guiding them in these many different manifestations that is most appropriate, most beneficial for sentient beings, and engages in all of these very spontaneously. So when we talk about the Buddha's benefiting sentient beings, the way they benefit sentient beings is through guiding sentient beings in their activities of what to practice and what to abandon, as it is stated in sutras that the Buddhas cannot wash away the negative karma or the sufferings of sentient beings with any kind of water, nor can they pluck out the suffering of sentient beings with their hands, pull out the suffering of sentient beings with their hands, nor can the Buddhas transfer or transplant their realizations towards sentient beings. So how can the Buddhas benefit sentient beings? It's only through showing the reality or the truth of the Dharma with respect to what to practice and abandon in life.
Kanda mewa dan sambha dan tuba, ane kanso de 아니 타게 나오고 그러네. 아니 도시 텐데 좀 나한테 개념 부디 다른 이야기 뜻이 좋아.
So in benefiting sentient beings, then the Buddha's benefit sentient beings in the way that which is most appropriate, in the way that which is most suitable or effective for sentient beings, by benefiting them in accordance with sentient beings' mind level, interests, aspiration, predispositions, or for those who are accepting of the profound view of emptiness, then teaching directly the view of emptiness. For those who cannot comprehend such subtle view of emptiness, then teaching emptiness at a more gross level. And then for those who are not able to accept emptiness, then teaching on the selflessness of a person. And for those that are unable to accept any kind of notion of selflessness, then the Buddha taught them self-existence like that. So in this way, Buddha taught sentient beings or guided sentient beings in ways that is most beneficial for sentient beings, and so in accordance with these teachings, then you have the collected works of Buddha's teachings in the form of these 100 volumes that are the collection of the Buddha's actual speech. So when the Buddhas actualize this kind of enlightenment of the four Buddha bodies, then what do they do? Is that they are forever engaged in the activities benefiting sentient beings. They never miss out even a moment or instant, of not benefiting sentient beings like that. In Buddhahood, then you have these major and minor marks of the quality of the holy body is that you are endowed with the 32 and 80 major and minor marks of that enlightenment. Your holy speech is endowed with these 60 malevolent qualities. Your holy mind is that that one is able to see all objects of knowledge in their conventional mode and in their ultimate mode, all at the same time, like looking at the palm of your hand, directly able to see all existence in their conventional and ultimate mode. And their loving compassion is much more than even a mother's love for her only child. The enlightened holy mind's love and compassion far exceeds even that of a mother's love for her only child like that. And their quality of their holy activities, their divine activities, is that they are forever spontaneously engaged in activities benefiting sentient beings without missing out even on a moment of opportunity to benefit sentient beings.
Oh yeah, that's it. And there is any that transition method
So this completes the Bodhisattva's grounds and path in a very gross and a very short way.
Yeah,
But in future, you know, through the detailed study of the Lamrim, then you can have a much greater understanding of the grounds and paths. And even, you know, even with regards to the qualities of our Buddha's holy body, speech, and mind, you know, you can study all of that in much greater detail in Lamrim and other texts. The thing is that in order to engage in meditation, then one must listen to a lot of teachings and be exposed to a lot of teachings to have the material for us to meditate on. So it says that, you know, there is a great virtue in listening to the teachings, because it is you know, every time we listen to the teachings, it is like it is an illuminating lamp, clearing away for us the darkness of our ignorance and confusion. You know, listening to the Dharma is like cultivating within us the weapon enabling us to destroy the enemy of our ignorance and delusions, the enemy of our ignorance and confusion. And you know, our occasions of listening to the Dharma is like cultivating for ourselves, or cultivating within us, our greatest friend, our greatest support. Because through this listening, you know, we receive the advice and counsel of the greatest skill and means in life. By oneself, having listened to the Dharma, blessed with the richness of having listened so extensively to the Dharma, then, you know, when we encounter other people in our life, our knowledge is the best gift that we can give others. So in this way, one should know that listening to the Dharma is so very, very important. So by listening, you know, we come to the knowledge of all phenomena, know exactly what we should do in life and what we should not do in life. Once we are exposed, you know, enriched ourselves with such extensive listening, then we will be able to easily abandon non-virtue in life. Because, you see, we know through the knowledge of listening, we know exactly what to do and what not to do in life. So it becomes very easy in life for us to abandon what is non-virtuous. By having enriched ourselves through extensive listening, then we become skilled in being able to abandon what is wasteful and meaningless in our life. You know, through through the knowledge of the Dhamma, through the knowledge that we gain through listening, then we become very astute about what benefits this lifetime, what benefits future lifetime. So like that, so we become very mindful of what is meaningful and what is wasteful. So this particular advice actually goes specifically to cultivating concentration. And it says that it is through listening that one has the opportunity for liberation and enlightenment. Why is that? It's through listening, you have the wisdom of listening, and because of having the wisdom of listening, you have the wisdom of contemplation, or the wisdom of understanding, and because you have that, you have the wisdom of meditation. And when one is able to fully develop and complete the wisdom of meditation, then one is able to abandon all the obscuration of delusions, all the obscuration to knowledge, and thereby attain enlightenment. So in this way, so in this way, then one should know that listening, enriching our experience with extensive listening is very, very important to cultivate the wisdom that comes through having listened to a lot of teachings. And it's not just sufficient just listening. Next phase is checking it out, analyzing it, understanding it, contemplating on it. And then whatever one has understood, checked out, then that wisdom of that understanding then needs to be further cultivated into meditation. And then, through meditation then, and gaining the wisdom that arises out of meditation on those points that one has understood.
Like for example,
when one first hears teachings on identifying what are the 10 non-virtuous things in our life, then one hears about it, one sees the benefit of it, one sees the advantage or disadvantage of practicing or not practicing, like that. And so, and thereby, one comes to live in ethics. And by being able to live in ethics, practicing such basic forms of ethics, then one accumulates the positive potential or the merit for higher rebirth. So if one is able to live in ethics, then one has accomplished the purpose of having heard about abandoning 10 non-virtues. One has accomplished the benefit of having identified what the 10 non-virtues are, because one has experienced, one has the result of living in ethics. And by living in ethics, then one has secured higher rebirth in terms of this and future lifetimes. So as Lama Tsongkhapa has often stated, saying that what is the point of listening? The point of listening is for us to know, for us to understand. And what is the point of having understood, and for what is the point of having known, is to be able to practice, to be able to live our life in that understanding. So therefore, with regards to everything that one has heard, to practice to the best of one's capacity is very important. So therefore, you know, for you also, whatever Dharma teachings one has heard, one should not just leave it alone on the realm of having heard, you know, but instead, to the best of one's own individual capacity, put it into practice, you know, as much as one can, as continuously as one can. So, you know, one should be able to make a mark of difference in one's life, through one's Dharma practice. Like, for example, by having studied the Dharma this year, then come next year, this time, then you should be able to feel that you have made some improvement in your way of thinking, in one's way of acting, you know, mm-hmm. like more positive. Of course, the very best of a progression is day-to-day progression, like come by having taught or by having listened to the Dharma today, and by having become more knowledgeable or more understood the Dharma today, then tomorrow becoming an even better person, and then the day after that becoming even much more better. Of course, that kind of day-to-day progression, you know, betterment in one's thoughts and actions is the very best of the kind. But even if you can't make such a scale of difference on a day-to-day basis, then, you know, making a difference month to month compared to last month, then one becoming a much better person in one's thoughts and actions to this month, and next month even becoming better. But even if one can't make a scale of difference on a month-to-month basis, at least try to make it on a year-to-year basis. So, Kinsumshi says, there isn't anything much more that he wants to say, and so the only thing he would like to request is for you to keep studying the Lamrim the best you can. And it is also very important in our life to, you know, to purify negative karma, do practices purify negative karma, and on the other hand also do practices to accumulate merit. So when you do the combination of these, you know, study on one hand, then as well as do practices purifying the obscurations of our negative karma, accumulating the merits so everything becomes successful, then whatever meditations we do has effect, has a result. And then one should not be, you know, short-sighted in one's practice, having great expectations, but instead, you know, have enduring perseverance in one's spiritual practice. Okay, that's all.
May the spiritual teachers teach me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all our many pains and sins. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May teaching, dispelling the darkness of the ancient world, how all we can agree.
And we will try not to let the teachings be in one ear and out the other, to stay inside.
That's very good. Because everyone to do that.
And because Sri Ramachandra, please come many times and stay longer. And to live very long and always be healthy.
Could you share that with us?
Yeah.